Hey there, loyal listeners. As you know, the Top Games podcast is made possible by Hardcore Gaming 101's Patreon supporters, who help keep this show alive by donating as little as $2 each month. If you were to join them in doing that, you would not only help keep the lights on at HG 101 Towers, you'd also get access to our super secret Patreon RSS feed, which is full of ad-free versions of this podcast with exclusive bonus game rankings. Here's a taste of what you've been missing. Our game for this episode is Papers, Please. It's a bureaucracy simulator.
You play as a customs officer border security guy in a fictional Eastern Bloc Soviet...
Arstotzka. Glory to Arstotzka! What you're doing is you're checking people's entry papers to get into a country.
And the game constantly... Are you going to have enough money to survive?
Well, if you switch them on and off between them, then...
Good old min-maxer here. Just starve your family on alternating
exactly.
days.
Exactly!
That's Monday, which means that you starve, but tomorrow you eat and you freeze.
Exactly!
Go to patreon.com/HG101 and pledge a couple bucks. That's patreon.com/HG101. Act now and be a hero.
Some, this is painfully obvious, but hardcore gaming means it ain't for the novices. The main source to brain train your knowledge and lay maintained with a course aimed at colleges. To HG 101, we give the honor. Thanks to Kirk, a lot of Xerxes to host it proper, as well as Satanga, Cal and Bobinator, Booker Hart and others discuss and discover all the 47,000 games. And when they rate them, you can bet it's scientifically locked in position. Speaking of which, no system is obscure. And look, they wrote a book about it. Go out and cop yours.
Hello and welcome to HardcoreGaming101.net's Top 47,858 Games of All Time podcast, where we objectively, definitively, and scientifically rank the games that you nominate. My name is Xerxes, and I'm the show's main host and producer, and on this podcast we have three rules. Rule 1, all rankings are final, official, and scientifically accurate. Rule 2, you can nominate one game at a time via 5-star review on iTunes or Stitcher. Those are the ones we try to get to first. You can also go to bit.ly/rankthisplease and add a game to the slush pile and cross your fingers. We make no guarantees on those. Rule number 3, you can nominate games that have already been nominated, just don't nominate games you've already ranked. See the master list for yourself. It's at bit.ly/47kgames. That's bit.ly/47kgames.
I was hoping you'd be dead so that I'd be debt-free.
All right, welcome to episode 238. We are doing Homeworld, space-based video game for nerds. That's right. We are doing the real space games. This one was nominated to us by Zapolis on iTunes and Estelle Leah on Stitcher. And I've got an extra bracket there which just says, longtime fan, so I don't know if they indicated that or if we just know that because we know everything about everything. This one was developed by Relic Games, or are they just called Relic? I think doesn't matter. It was published by Sierra Studios, which again, is that like a subdivision of Sierra, or was that just what they called themselves?
To be honest, Sierra went from like Sierra Online with Python, and then like Sierra something else, and Sierra Studios, and Sierra whatnot. I don't even know.
No, it's just... See, it's that company. It is the...
It says Sierra Studios on the box. So that's what you get. That's what people saw in the shop back when you still bought games in big cardboard boxes. So that's what you get.
Yeah. This one, yeah, you mentioned it. It's a PC game because it came in a big cardboard box, which pretty much limits it to just PC games. They were greedy about shelf space. It was actually brought about their downfall in some ways. People kind of got sick of, you know, selling 6 copies of a game that took up half the store. This one was released, I don't have it written down, but it's September 1999, was it?
It is 28th of September 1999. That is the original version.
That's the original version. That's the one I played, but there is a remaster.
Yes.
And we will talk a tiny bit about the remaster. But that was released in 2015, so pretty comparatively recent. Sort of a big deal. I think they may have done the remaster as well, maybe to gauge interest, because the Homeworld 3 has been announced. You know, if you needed the shocking conclusion to the Homeworld trilogy, it's coming out at some point. Does it need a third game? I mean,
yeah, it's actually, good. Depending on how you count, it's the fifth or the eighth game, but it's not the third. So,
yes, Homeworld.
I think this is a Resident Evil situation, where Resident Evil 7 is like the
38th game. Yeah, in terms of timeline, there are games that take place in between it. It's not like there are a bunch of games that are unrelated that are non-canon, because Resident Evil has like Operation Raccoon City, which is strictly non-canon because Claire dies in it.
Yeah, and codename Veronica.
So, Codename Veronica is in the timeline. That is between.
That's what I mean. So even if you discount like Resident Evil, the pinball game, then you still end up with more than seven games.
Yeah, but Homeworld, we are talking about the first one. It's a space-based RTS, which is a little unusual. You are the RTX expert. Usually RTSs are set on the ground or something
most
akin
of the time
to the ground.
This game here is actually pretty bold, because right on the box, the big cardboard box, it says Homeworld 3D real-time strategy in 1999. 3D in 1999, that can be a bit of a mixed blessing.
Can you remind what games came out in 1999 in 3D? Do you know any other game that came out in 1999? Are you willing to guess?
Ooh, 1999. Huh. I could name you a bunch of them in 1998. Because
1998 is the good year, though.
It was, that's the one with Half-Life and Max Payne. No, Max Payne was 2001. That started development in 98, I think. Or no, it didn't, whatever. We're not talking about Max Payne today.
You know what came out in 1998? It was Resident Evil 2.
Was it? Okay.
Yeah, I think Ocarina of Time as well came out in 98. I think that's right. I hope I'm right. It might have been Majora's Mask. Don't know. It's not
important. So this was still rather bold, because a real-time strategy game had not fully transitioned to the third dimension at this time here, which was probably for the better, because I think 3D was out of its very experimental phase at the time, but you still had a lot of games where 3D just meant it ran at a lower frame rate and looked really ugly.
Yeah, so the catch with the RTS games had always been that usually they're drawn fairly far back, and they usually have lots of units on screen, which at the time meant that, it made way more sense to put a single texture, a single sprite on screen that was the character, rather than wasting like a pretty decent chunk of the memory on a 3D character. It was a bad idea.
That's true. You can, of course, zoom in, but that often means that you can't really see anything. So you're wasting your models a little bit if you put in a lot of detail. But this game here is not only 3D in the sense that it uses 3D graphics, it is also displayed in the third dimension, so it's not a flat space you have here. There are a couple of games that obviously take place in space, like real-time strategy games like StarCraft. The original one takes place in space. Occasionally you have these platforms that float above planets, but that's still flat space.
Yes.
So you kind of fly under them or anything. You do have a couple of games that sort of do that, like Submarine Titans. That's a game that takes place underwater, and you have different layers, but that's more akin to air units flying above the ground in like land-based RTS games. This game here has actual 3D stuff, and you can even utilize that in the game beyond just flying up and down. For example, there's a spherical formation your ships can take, where they just surround the target and blast it from all sides. So they made quite
that
a bit of it.
It looks so awkward when you use that formation in the actual game, because
it looks
kind of hard lock around the enemy and just kind of awkwardly float around them. It looks very unnatural.
I think a part of the reason is that I think space is difficult to imagine because it's really big. And I don't think the human mind is really made to imagine, how much is a light year? I mean, we can look at the number, but it doesn't really tell us much. And as a result, a lot of space stuff looks kind of like Earth stuff. For example, if you have a sci-fi series and there's a space battle, there's a good chance that the spaceships will be aligned properly, like, let's say, two aircraft carriers would be. Whereas in reality, there's a good chance that one of the ships would be upside down from your perspective. But it wouldn't matter, because that ship has some sort of gravity generator. So in space, there is no real up or down. But it would really look awkward if one of them was just flipped. And it might even look silly. So most writers, and I do fully understand that, they just stick with space is kind of an ocean. So everybody's aligned properly, and we don't have silly like vertical ships.
In some ways, you can blame Star Trek for that as well, since Star Trek kind of set the template for a lot of sci-fi in visual form. And obviously, Star Trek was basically I guess it's like submarines. It's basically how they did that they move around.
It feels a little bit with like ships stalking one another and like people talking about the shields being up and down and stuff like that. So it's very procedural. It's less dogfighting and more like stalking.
Dogfighting is more of Star Wars kind of thing, because that was based on World War II sort of flight movies and stuff.
Yeah, you have the Dam Buster scene.
Yeah.
That's similar to the Death Star assault scene and stuff.
But this one, it does kind of do some of that alignment stuff. It's not willing to go all in on it, because it does still orient you, the player, in more or less, you know, one direction. There is an up, there is a down.
Yeah, to be honest, I'm okay with that, because it probably would look a little bit strange, even though it might be more realistic. But yeah, I think it might be more visually appealing to have the space is ocean bit a little bit.
I mean, certainly,
even if you can't fly up and down.
Control wise, it makes a lot of sense. The game, I don't know, like it does claim to be full 3D, and that is technically true. But the actual maps themselves are kind of large, but not too tall. You know, if you pictured space as proper 3D, as in the area would be a big cube, essentially. You know, like that would be your player space. Doesn't really do that. It's more of a quite a long but fairly flat like rectangular prism.
I think that's partially done so you can actually see everything at once, at least if you zoom out. Otherwise you might end up wondering where's half my fleet, and then turns out the fleet's actually above you.
It's actually really easy to lose your fleet in this game. You can press the space bar and find it. So it's a tricky game to control, isn't it?
It's not easy.
You have to wrap your head around it.
There's a reason why a lot of games stick with just two dimensions. Well, firstly, a lot of them are land-based. You probably don't need three dimensions in your like World War II tank game. And
plus, you can just say there are planes in the air, and it's fine.
That's true. Yeah, and those are a little bit easier to do, because for the most part, plane means it just phases through all obstacles.
Yes.
But otherwise, still mostly works like a land vehicle here. So, and this game here, I think they did quite well to set it in space, obviously, because the game runs better, because all you really have is a space background, your ships, the enemy ships, and the stuff like asteroids.
Yes, there's very little stuff going on screen. They have relatively decent texture work. It doesn't look too blurry, even when you zoom in quite a bit, so they kind of did pretty well with like the economics of their art. The ships themselves are obviously pretty low in poly count, but they're very, for the most part, other than your main ship, the homeworld ship, and a couple of
the
mothership, and a couple of the ships that you'll come against in the game itself, like you know the trader ship is this weird like donut with a bit cut out of it, you know. Except for some of those, you will they're just like small little boxy things with some shape to them. You can visually see them fairly easily, but they are clearly like, ah, I see. It's because, it's a 1999 game. And very little in the way of animation. It's just all kind of things moving from point to point. Do some of the weapons track? I think they do.
Yeah, you do have, like the main motion you have is that everybody leaves a trace. So you can kind of see where things are going. And you also have faction colors that are mainly visible through the iron beams that ships fire.
Ooh, I like the iron beams. Those are really cool looking. Yeah, very nice. Love iron beams.
Yeah. This game here, it does have a little bit of a distinction between the various factions. Well, there's two main factions.
Well,
and
before we get to the factions, what is the game? What are we doing in the game? It's called Homeworld.
It is called Homeworld, yeah. So you do not start on your homeworld. Instead, start on Korak, the desert planet. The one that isn't Dune or Tatooine or other. Doesn't Stargate also have a desert planet? No.
Well, I mean, the Stargate, the movie, is set on, Egypt, the planet.
Okay, that one. So this is like one of the slightly less popular desert planets. And you take the role of a civilization that has lived there but doesn't originate from there. And all the tribes on the planet unite and build a gigantic ship, the aforementioned mothership.
They basically find a mothership or a ship that says, hey, actually, you don't live here. And they're like, thank goodness. This place sucks.
Yeah, they fight the Guidestone, and that is essentially, I guess you could almost call it a religious artifact.
I mean, it united an entire planet in a singular purpose, so I think that's fair enough.
Mm-hmm. And the thing about the mothership is that it's capable of hyperspace jumping. So you can essentially escape the... Well, you can not only escape the planet, but actually escape the system, go somewhere else. And that doesn't go so well, because as soon as you do that, hostile forces show up and essentially just burn the entire planet.
Actually, the intro to this game is astoundingly good, considering the sort of expectation of the plot in like an RTS or a space game, or really anything. It's pretty good. Decent voice acting. The writing is not atrocious.
That's another thing. So this game has hand-drawn cutscenes. Mm-hmm. It's 1999. They could have had 3D animated cutscenes, which would have aged terribly for the most part. Unless, then again, maybe they could have set all of them in space, which probably makes them...
Well, they do have some little cutscenes do take place in space. You do get... sometimes it replays footage of stuff that happened. That usually is shown in-engine.
I think that always looks a bit better because you can just have a slightly like colored nebula space background, and you have the very angular spaceship. So all of this looks better than any sort of organic or like any sort of 3D animated human from that era.
Yeah, I mean, all the humans that you might see in this, I think they're pretty much all just relegated to cutscenes, and they're not big on showing you most humans in general. It's usually just not quite abstract shapes, but you know, just up close details of things that is happening in the story. But there is it lends a really interesting, almost unearthly sort of feel to the game, because you spend pretty much the whole time looking at spaceships and nebulas and stuff. So you are off on your adventure because you kind of are forced to, because some dickheads blow up your planet.
That's not a big spoiler. That happens right at the start of the game.
I mean, it's so not a spoiler that it's literally like there's no other way the game can operate. I didn't read the back of the box, but I was, that's what happens. The game is we have to go to our...
That was also mentioned in magazines and stuff and previews at the time. And that's what set you up. Because after that, all the colonists that are on the mothership in the fleet, those are the only survivors. So your planet is pretty much gone. I mean, it was a desert planet before, and now it's a desert planet whose atmosphere has probably been burned, so it's even less attractive.
Half the planet is on fire, which is not great.
It's fire you can see from space, so it's
a big fire. That's a lot of fire. That's a really cool little painted effect. It's very nice. That sort of leads into the chief... I want to say it's the chief gimmick of the game, even though it has fully 3D, you know, kind of movement. It's a sequential story, linear sort of thing. And it doesn't really... It's divided into chapters, which you kind of reach by space hyper-jumping, which is an amusing effect. It just kind of makes a door, and it just kind of door goes through your ship.
Oh, yeah. It's very sharp-angled. You think the hyperspace jump would create some sort of like very wake, like floaty kind of portal, but nope, that's a very...
It's a square.
Yeah, as you said, it's a door, essentially.
Yeah. I swear I've seen that effect in a sci-fi movie before, so I'm not sure which one, but...
I'm not sure. It did remind me of the Ultima Moon Gates for some reason.
Maybe that's it. I don't know. It's cool. It's a nice effect considering that the game is... Yeah, there's not too many effects going on. So every time you jump into space, you're like, yeah, look at that kind of thing going on. But yes.
Your mothership also looks really cool. It's kind of a boomerang.
Yeah, it's like a half moon sort of shape. And
Probably makes no sense from a like engineering point of view, but looks really cool.
Yeah, well, it's important because it also functions as it's your home base. You can't move it in this game. You can move it in the other ones, I think, but not this one.
Yeah, I think here the idea is that the mothership is essentially so slow that you don't really use it for anything but hyperspace jumping.
It's mildly annoying because sometimes I'm like, come on, move the mothership like 1 kilometer that way so I can shoot this jackass. But no, it won't let you.
Nope, it's not going to happen. The mothership can defend itself, but it's not really a combat vessel. It's really your home base.
It's mostly able to defend itself. This game has the very classical series of different crafts, you know, fighter craft and what are they call them? Covets, and it's got capital ships.
You have the the small, light, and fast ones, the slower and big ones. You have some support vehicles, you have, or vessels, I guess. You have resource gatherers, repair guys, guys who can steal other guys' ships.
It's really funny. It's really great. They just kind of literally drive into them and drive off with them. It's really funny.
Yeah, yeah, I think the idea is that they just steal the ship and then...
I think they steal the ship and basically execute the crew. It's pretty... Yeah.
To us, that's the only way, unless the mothership has just a gigantic prison bay.
Because there's one bit where you do pull in a crew, and they're like, we interrogated them. They did not survive. I'm like, we're the good guys in this then. Okay, cool.
they started it.
Yeah, they did. I mean, that's... Well, maybe. I don't know. Anyway, you got all these different ships, and it does a good job with the ships. They are genuinely, the large ships can't turn very quickly, so they are vulnerable to kind of faster ships that kind of come in at them at waves, so they can't really correctly switch to fire at them. It's especially true of the ion cannon ships, because they have to fire one cannon from, like, the big center part of the ship, so they are actually vulnerable to, like, smaller craft kind of hassling them, whereas... The smaller craft kind of get absolutely destroyed by any heavily armored craft that just kind of fires around itself. I think it mentions that. Is that like the coverage percent or something in the build screen?
I'm not entirely sure, to be honest.
There are several stats.
This game here throws a lot of stats at you. Not all of them are super obvious.
No. It's actually sometimes hard to read. It doesn't have my biggest complaint, probably literally my biggest complaint, not many tooltips. It's 1999, probably should have had more tooltips in your game.
Yeah. The game, that's one of the game's main downsides. So Cal, you mentioned the progressive campaign.
Yes.
What was common for most RTS games at the time, it's still somewhat common, is that you build your gigantic force of like tanks or spaceships or whatever. Then you have 100 of them at the end of the stage, and then you start the next mission, and then you have 4.
Congratulations, you've won. And then, they just throw out all their tanks.
Exactly. And it's understandable. Obviously, you can't just accumulate hundreds and hundreds of tanks in a regular game unless the campaign is specifically designed around that.
Usually with those games, we've moved you to a new theater or a new area, so you couldn't take your tanks is how they usually kind of get around it.
Logistics just don't allow it.
Mm-hmm.
But the logistics do allow to build another 100 tanks in the new theater.
Just steal all of the... Just go to a mine and construct 100 tanks on site with one guy.
Yeah, that's true. Also, all the money you earned during the last campaign, that's also gone.
Yeah, it's capitalism, buddy. They just... You make it and they just take it. And you don't get to see any of it.
Yeah. Also, there's a mine right next to your base, but that was never harvested for some reason until right now.
We also built the mine already.
That's true as well, but we didn't utilize it.
No.
Because the time wasn't right.
But this game does pretty well with its sort of excuse plot and stuff, because you aren't ready to fly out of your planet, so you don't have any research. Your ship's not really done. You have no resources, because this was just the test flight. You weren't...
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, so you really are kind of just building it on the fly, and so each hyper jump, you just kind of grab your resources as best as you can. The enemy usually show up too soon, especially if you're not doing too well. This is due to the nature of the game, it is actually possible you may have to restart the campaign, which is very uncommon for a RTS.
The game can snowball a little bit, because obviously if you lose too many craft in the beginning or too many resources in general, then you're going to do worse against the next enemy fleet.
You're
going to lose more craft, and then you'll do even worse against the next enemy fleet. And so I think that makes the earlier missions not the more difficult one, but probably the more critical ones.
Yeah, it's kind of a pain, because the game really will... there is a tutorial, but it will throw you in quite deep. There's like half a tutorial when you start like the first level, and then you pretty much might just lose all of your ships, and then you're not starting too great.
I would almost recommend to maybe play the first maybe 4 missions and then just restart. That sounds a little bit lame, but you're probably going to have more fun in the long run that way.
The game does attempt to scale, and I believe the sequel and the remaster, which is on the sequel's engine and not the engine of the first Homeworld game, I think they scale even more, But yeah, they don't have kind of a scale basement. They will, if you completely botch up, they will not kind of discreetly give you more resources or something. It doesn't do that. It's still kind of mean about it. And if you do well, my understanding is that the game will really rub your face in defeat if you try and do particularly well. The game will crush you.
Whether or not this game here, the original Homeworld, has scaling has been under debate. So a lot of people say it doesn't, but there are also some modders that have looked into the files. But to be honest, I don't know enough about modding Homeworld to judge whether or not that is correct. But the sequel definitely scales. In fact, it scales so much that...
It's actually infamous for it.
Yeah, it is infamous for it. So the main problem isn't that... I think it scales in a somewhat linear fashion. So it's not like you have double the army you had last time. Now the enemy has quadruple the fleet. It's not like that, but the problem is that the enemy might attack you very early, so you're at a tactical disadvantage, even if the strategic situation hasn't changed, and it doesn't scale your resource that you haven't spent. So what you can do is you can just scrap your entire fleet and then just rebuild it, which you could say it's cheese, but at the same time, it doesn't really feel great if you carefully preserved your entire fleet during the previous mission and maybe even captured some expensive enemy ships, and then the game just punishes you for it by throwing even more enemy ships at you and also doing it very early in the next mission.
Although in this particular one, you mentioned the capture ships. I believe there is a bug or a inadvertent bug with the only Homeworld, not Homeworld the remastered one or the sequel, where the captured ships don't count to your population cap, apparently.
So that is true. You can get over your cap. And I think that's also the idea, because otherwise you might just not preserve the captured ships, because they're like, oh, they count towards my population limit anyway, so I can just scrap them and build my own ships later. So this one here ties more into the plot as well, because you only have so many resources, so you have to make do with everything you have, and you have to scrap as much together as you can get. So you also grow attached to those vessels, and those vessels can also be ones that you can't build with your faction or even with any faction. For example, there's one faction that has a frigate with a quadruple iron beam.
It's pretty good.
And yeah, it's pretty good. So it's very scary if you have to face it, but if you capture a couple of those or even just one, it feels really great, because now you have this really powerful ship and it's fairly slow, but once it actually is in position and can fire at the enemy, it's very lethal, and you definitely want to preserve that ship. And that gives you an additional motivation, so you don't just take your entire fleet and go attack, move on the enemy, and then just rebuild everything. So instead, you get a little bit of an attachment. That isn't completely new. A couple of games did that before. Fire Emblem essentially has a similar system, and Panzer General as well, where you take units through the campaign and they accumulate promotions. But real-time strategy games don't really tend to do that frequently. There are a couple of games, but Homeworld appears to be the first one that really bases this entire campaign around that concept.
I will mention this one does not have promotional stuff, which is interesting, because when you mention it, it seems like that would be kind of a very reasonable thing for this game to have had that.
That's true. You'd think that would give you an extra motivation. I think promotion definitely did exist at the time. For example, This Means War has them. And This Means War was actually one of the earlier games to do that. I wouldn't call it the first, because there was probably some other games that did it.
I mean, if you really want to go very early. Cannon Fodder, which is not an RTS, but is a squad tactics game. Your squaddies leveled up over the game.
Yeah. And I mean, it's not a completely new system. RPGs have that. Mm-hmm. Fire Emblem, again, also has leveling, obviously. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's interesting, but some games just went with that, even though you'd think they have it. Same goes for the Blizzard RTS games, even though in those games you mainly manage small squads of units. So you'd think they would give you promotions to give you an additional incentive to not just build a huge tank blob. Or, well, I guess most of the games don't have tanks. they do. Never mind. What I want to say is that you'd think they give you an additional motivation there, but they didn't quite do that. But at the same time, maybe they also wanted for you to be able to maybe scrap ships and build new ones and replace them and mix up your fleet a little bit without feeling
too bad.
You don't
get a great refund on scraps in this game, though, to be honest. It's not like a...
No.
It's not even like... I think it's about 50%, but it might even be less. It's not great.
It might be... 50% seems to be the standard in most games for selling stuff. It's exactly half of it.
Yes.
And which is a little bit of a bad deal, but at the same time, there's just no market. You can always sell everything at 50%.
Well, this one you do potentially have to sell, because if you lose your resource gatherers, you can lose the game. Like, it literally will game over you.
And it's also recommended to always harvest everything on a map before you hyperjump.
Yes.
Otherwise, you...
I was going to say, that struck me as immediately something that you should do. I don't think the game kind of makes it really secret. Like, should I jump or get these resources? Like,
yeah, to be honest, resources. If you've cleared the map and there's just no threat left, it's kind of just wasting your time, which the remaster acknowledges by just letting you hyperjump and just giving you all the resources.
Which is kind of interesting, because the first game does acknowledge that it's wasting your time, because when you are instructed, oh, we're getting out of here, we're going to hyperjump, you press the hyperjump button, and I really like this bit of the game. All of the ships, because they can't hyperjump, well, some of them can, the capital ships can, but the ones that can't, all converge on the mothership and just slowly make their way into the mothership, and it's a very cool just sci-fi thing, you know, like very, like, you see potentially, like, dozens of ships all just get pile into the mothership in order to begin the jump, but the game acknowledges that could take, like, multiple minutes and you might not want to wait, so it just says quick jump, and you press that, and it just, you know, counts all the ships and jumps, so it's a bit weird that they didn't kind of acknowledge the other, it takes while to get the resources.
Yeah, I think my theory is that they built it into the game. It looks really cool, but it also gets kind of old once you've done it 12 times.
Yeah, and there's like 15 missions, so you will get kind of sick of it. But it is very cool. Yeah, you may have to bite the bullet and reset at some point if you play it. I mean, that's the way it's going to be. It's not especially long, is it? It doesn't strike me as a long game, really.
Yeah, I think it depends on how you approach it. Some of the maps are fairly large.
But you can save the middle of them.
Yeah, you can. And yeah, you hear us. I forgot the name of the game.
Are you what talking about iWar? Independence
definitely,
War?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we added saving the expansion pack, but still not in the main game. Ah. And there's a lot of missions which you can finish very quickly. For example, there's a later one. I'm not going to spoil it because the story is actually quite good. So I'm not going to spoil that for you. Actually. It is, yeah. Good writing. And where you have to defeat a very powerful vessel. And you probably are paranoid about it, which you should be, but there are like one or two tactics that allow you to defeat it relatively easily. So you can do that in maybe 10 minutes, but you can also spend like half an hour just scrapping resources and expanding your fleet and like carefully stalking around it and whatnot. So if you kind of know what you're doing, the campaign length probably drops quite a bit. But to us, I think the campaign is long enough. It doesn't really overstay its welcome. And they pretty much do everything which they could do. I think if they added even more, it might just feel a little bit padded.
No, I mean, like,
and I didn't really mind it being the length it is.
Even the stuff that you do, I don't know, like, stuff like, yeah, you have to really, like, carefully manage your resources and what you build, but it is kind of a different approach than a regular RTS, since it is dicey to make new units. You don't really want to scrap your whole fleet, because you're not going to make the amount back as such. So you do end up just kind of working with what you've built and then carefully adding new things, but you don't really have the same sort of resource gathering. You don't have any abilities or anything. It's none of that. You don't activate any of that kind of stuff. You got formations and things. They seem like limited in efficiency.
Yeah.
Like,
to be honest, some of them are just not very good. For example, there's a line formation.
Yeah, it seems to.
Which for the most part just seems to make you very vulnerable. And I think there probably are situations where it's good. And there's also a problem with your capital ships. As you've mentioned, the frigates, they're quite slow. And if you have a formation where you have a ship at the tip, and that's your capital ship, and you order everyone in the formation to turn around, they don't just flip by 180 degrees. Instead, they just slowly turn around.
That's not how space works.
Yeah, then they're probably dead by the time they actually turn around. So you might want to use like the X formation or so, which is a good all-round formation.
I did also find I found it tricky to use proper, like actual tactics, like other than trying to not let them kind of hassle your big slow ships or something, due to the 3D nature of space, and you know, when we'll say 20 or 30 enemy ships show up, can be quite difficult to really do that much. You know, you can you can say, hey, attack this ship, or hey, attack that ship, but it is kind of tricky to sort of keep your ships together, I think, especially juggling the controls, which will take some getting used to. It's basically like moving a 3D camera in like a 3D software. You gotta like pan and shift, and you gotta twist it. You gotta sort of switch between the sensors, which are your map, and to move things, you actually have to press the M key. You don't move by just right clicking. It just doesn't do that because you got this shift in 3D. There's this whole stuff. It feels like sometimes it's hard to actually do much strategy wise unless you're kind of getting the drop on the enemy, at which point you can kind of do something more intelligent.
Yeah, to be honest, I'm not the biggest micromanagement person, and I'm usually more concerned with like the composition of the fleet and everything, or just in general, not just with this game here, than with how I manage individual ships. I know you can do that really well in this game if you're good enough and you've mastered the controls. And there's probably people who can like micromanage every one of their scout craft and whatnot and defeat like a double strength enemy fleet with no losses, but I'm not that kind of person. And I would focus more on thinking about what ships you build in general rather than how you use every individual ships.
Yeah, you want to be careful not to scrap, like, you don't want to build a bunch of like interceptors or something and then lose them all, because that would actually be a substantial investment that you just kind of burnt by messing up.
That is true. Yeah, this is a little bit of a downside, but I don't think there's much. You can't really make the campaign work in a different way without giving up how the campaign works in general. So if you said like, oh, we're just going to reimburse you for your loss and stuff, then you would kind of lose the general driving idea. And that very much ties into the plot, where your ship holds the last survivors of your people and will probably make everything a little less dramatic. So overall, I think I still prefer how the game is designed, even if it's not probably not the most accessible approach for newcomers to the genre.
No, it's not. It's probably, unless the theme is going to sell you on this strongly, it's certainly not probably the best one to start with in the extensive genre of strategy games.
That's true. There's also no difficulty selection, so you only have this one difficulty. So there's no super easy mode where like all your ships are twice as strong as the enemy ships or something like that. So what they present you here, that story, that's the one you're going to play.
Yes, which can make it quite hard since it does scale particularly.
There's a little bit of scaling, but it's not that much, and it's never going to make the game super easy if you're already struggling.
Yes, we're gonna have to rank it. That's what we're gonna have to
we
do.
We should rank it.
I like it, and it's fairly unique. I know that it's one of those games that the fans of it just always say, this is the best game. Where is the next one? And apparently they are getting a next one. So that's actually kind of a shock if it turns out good.
If they can catch lightning in a bottle again. Yeah, this game here it's actually pretty good. It has aged well. Even the original looks still pretty nice, even though most people are probably going to play the remaster. The 3D space combat is done pretty well. The story is good, and the campaign progression is very interesting. I think even if you don't really like it all that much, not just generally you, not you, specifically.
That's okay.
I think it still can be acknowledged as an interesting concept.
Yeah. I like the I thought it was interesting, and it does sell itself on its like interesting. It has a premise and it sticks to it, and that works very well because the RTS genre is crowded with pretty much the same game.
This game here was praised for not being a Command & Conquer clone at the time.
You could praise it for that exactly today as well. It's timeless like that. There's not like another kind of game in the homeworld genre. It's quite narrow to just homeworld.
Yeah, if there is, there will be very, very few. And the only thing, I would say the only major design flaw is that the two factions, they're pretty similar.
They deleted one in the remaster.
Yeah, so you don't really have much of a choice regarding like different tacts or anything. So this is no StarCraft. But at the same time, it probably would have been difficult to design the game around two factions that really work quite different. So I don't really blame them too much for that. I mean, in hindsight, I'm surprised this even has two factions.
It does seem like, it really seems like a waste. It seems to make more sense to just...
Yeah, I guess maybe for multiplayer, but yeah.
Yeah, that's probably the thing that most feels like a tack on, because all RTSs had two, at least two sides, even if they were basically the same.
Yeah. But guess what? You can move the mothership in multiplayer.
Yeah. It's confusing, because in single player, it lets you try and move the mothership, and it just tells you engines are not operating or whatever. Like, it just... It's annoying, I'll tell you what.
Yeah, it baits you and then doesn't let you do it.
That's right. Where are we putting it, Tax?
That is a good question. I think we can rank this somewhat high.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at the 140 range here.
Okay, that is somewhat high. Points.
Yeah. I mean, it does have games like, just an example, 131 GoldenEye 007, which was pretty good for its time, but hasn't aged particularly well. But
this one's opposite, but this one, I don't think this one informed many other games. This one's just kind of like, it's Homeworld, and everyone's like, great! Then they didn't go anywhere with it.
Yeah, you'd think someone would have tried to clone this. Maybe someone did, but if they did, then there's no like big title that is based on this.
It's its own unique thing, which means that you got to recommend it as a, should people play it still?
Yeah, I think it's very much playable, both the original and the remaster. And you can appreciate it for various things, either the campaign progression, like mechanically, the story. You can also the 3D combat. So there's a lot of layers on which this game here may appeal to you. Maybe all of them as well.
I want to say it's actually probably one of the most worthwhile RTSs that exist, as far as I can tell. Because, if you had to pick like three to play, you could probably put this in the three. It's probably not the one to play, but...
Yeah, it would be a pretty safe bet. And this, if someone like told you their top 10 RTS games, I wouldn't be surprised if this one here made it into it.
So, I'm feeling 144 is Alien Isolation. Probably would put it above Alien Isolation. I'll tell you.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
I don't really feel strongly about Super Mario Sunshine.
It's a 3D Super Mario game.
Yes, exactly. And there was basically nothing but better 3D Super Mario games. There were several better ones.
That's how I knew Super Mario Sunshine. I know the Super Mario Sunshine, the 3D Mario game that isn't as good as the other 3D Mario games.
So, I just don't want to put this one in the wrong place, but as I do think people should check it out, because it successfully does what a lot of RTSs kind of stumble with, which is, basically story and pacing and kind of making an interesting campaign with actual stakes. It's most, as you said, most RTSs, there's the gameplay part and there's the story part, and they struggle to kind of make those two fit together nicely. Even something like StarCraft, which is like famous for having good story and stuff, the actual game is the level you built 6,000 tanks and steamroll everything. And it's like, okay, well, why couldn't we stop the enemy in the next stage? it's always got that like overhanging question about why they suck so much if they're winning, So
that is true. Also, why the game gets progressively harder, even though you build more and bigger tanks with every mission.
This one it is very cruel in that it doesn't get easier, despite the fact that you can succeed. But that's also in the plot, I guess. It's just kind of like, that's better than Voyager. Fucking Star Trek Voyager. That's not on our list, though. We haven't ranked Star Trek Voyager, so...
Is that Star Trek Voyager the video game?
Yeah, I think it's got a couple of video games. The, the FPSs?
Star Trek, Elite Force.
Yeah, those are Voyager for some reason.
Yeah.
I'll put those below this for sure. Dragon's Dogma? 142?
You know what? I would put this below Maniac Mansion.
All right, that's 137.
Yeah, because Maniac Mansion also has aged pretty well, but pushed the genre a little bit more forward and inspired more other games.
I will say Laura Bow, which is directly below it, is a little bit similar in that it takes the genre in a weird direction that nobody else really kind of could figure out where to go from it.
The
whole thing is an investigation, and you have to actually... basically declare your like Clue, you have to declare at the end of the game what happened, which is,
oh yeah, that's the one with the insane legal system.
Yes, it's like, you are not 100% right, therefore the murderer goes free. Like,
yeah, also the coroner takes the case, which I'm pretty sure violates separation of powers, but what do I know? I'm not a lawyer.
It's the 1920s, so. You know? It's
well, yeah, anything can happen in the 1920s.
Apparently so. What is... Oh, Boku no Natsu Sumi is that as the relaxing town game, right? Like, you go to the town and you just hang out.
That sounds like the total opposite of...
It's basically the complete opposite of this game. Yeah, it's the absolute total opposite. I like it, though. And then Suzuki Bakuhatsu, the bomb girl game. Ooh. Let me arbitrarily put it above Suzuki Bakuhatsu, but probably below Boku no Natsu Asumi.
That's okay. Do you want to separate the two?
Yeah, Japanese we can separate names, the Japanese names out, so I less chance of me having to pronounce them both back to back. But keep her story next to Suzuki Bakuhatsu, because they're both about ladies who explode, I think.
Okay, sounds good to me.
Yeah, so great. We're going to put it there. I highly recommend Homeworld. I don't really know, like, if you don't like RTSs, I don't think it'll change your mind on the RTS genre.
No, unless you totally dig the story, this is not going to sway you towards that genre.
But I like the way it works. I kind of wish there was a proper remaster of it, like one that smooths it just a tiny bit, you know, just the remaster makes a couple of the edges a little bit less pointy, but it doesn't kind of like clean the difficulty curve up a bit. I would like to see a little bit more.
Depending on your opinion, might even make it worse. Mm. But that's a little bit of a... That a little bit depends on how you approach the game.
Also, music, we didn't even mention it, is phenomenal. This game has a fantastic soundtrack. It's like sci-fi, atmospheric stuff, as you would expect. But I think there's like a little bit of... I don't know how to describe it other than sort of like tribal beats or something. Like, it's got like, you know, that sort of like a bit more rhythm to it. You know, it's got like drums that come in and stuff that, I think it's supposed to theme around the desert theme of the kind of people that are in the, you know, in the game, like their sort of thing. It sounds really cool. And it's, I think it's dynamic-ish. I don't remember if it cuts in when you're in fights or not, but at least they...
Yeah, that also ties into the names this game uses. So you're most likely going to play as the Kushan, and there's actually there was an ancient empire called the Kushan Empire that reigned in Central Asia, I think around shortly the first century BC or so, or first century AD, and there's also another people called the Kadeshi, who may or may not be named after the Egyptian town of Kadesh. And I think so they took some inspiration from that. None of these people are really based on any like people from Earth strongly, but you get some vibes from that.
The more you know.
Yep.
Yeah, that's we end on an educational note today. We teach, but we don't learn.
That's all for this episode. Special thanks goes out to our lovely co-hosts and compatriots, our theme song MC Norm, check him out at Normally Retro on Twitter, and our technical assistant, video editor, and scriptwriter Ed Burns. You can support this podcast by making a small monthly donation at patreon.com/HG101, I know I did, by subscribing to the HG101 YouTube channel, and by following at GC9X and at HG_101 on Twitter. You can also hang out with us at our Discord channel. It's at bit.ly/HGDiscord, but most importantly, help us spread the love of games by getting on iTunes, subscribing to HG101, and giving us a 5-star review. Do it because you like us and you want us to succeed. Until next time, keep keeping it real.